Blog Talk Radio.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Anything's possible!
RSG, Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Mark the Game Changer.
What's your name, boy?
D-Well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
T.O.T. Sports Ph.D.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
We need more dollars.
RSG, Renegade Radio. The floodgates is about to open,
Everybody has an opinion.
A man must have a code.
We're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello, you play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage being
hit.
I mean, I'm not griping the third overall player on my list.
I blame it on Nintendo. It's provocative.
Jeez, we don't make excuses. You know, we're not going to make any excuses.
You need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it, sucker?
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RSG. Renegade Radio. How you doing tonight? I am one third of the illustrious three-man booth, the host of the show, Marcus the Game Changer. Allow me to bring in the other two-thirds of the three-man booth. I have, to my left, kicking it hard, hanging low, I got my man, Phil T. Sports PhD. How's it go, brother?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. I'm here chilling, enjoying the NBA playoffs. But I got to tell you, Marcus, I'm having a good day. I'm having a good day for two specific reasons, okay? The first reason, I listened to Kanye West, late registration and graduation today while cutting the grass.
Mm.
Two of the hottest albums, I mean, in hip-hop ever. You know, you put a top 50... top 100 albums, that's got to be on there. The second reason, I'm flying high, okay? Get them high. See how I did that? The second reason, the second reason why I'm flying high, okay? And shout out to my man T-Rob from Cleveland who's listening in. But the second reason why I'm flying high is because I got that Slam magazine in the mail yesterday and cracked it open. Cracked it open. And they had an old school section, they had a special layout on Ron Harper. And the thing I like about Slam is they don't clean up your grammar, okay? And we've all heard Ron Harper talk. We've all heard him talk. Ron can score 60 points, and they may not interview him for that reason. And in the interview... just a very extended introduction, Marcus. But in the interview, they didn't clean it up. And it was love reading Dayton's Ron Harper, who won 5 championship rings, just get down and talk the way he talked. And I was just loving it. So that's why I'm flying high today, Mark.
Okay. Now, usually I go to my right and I got my man D. Wills and I tell him to holler at the people. But he's not here tonight. He's got some things to hold down and he's gonna do what he needs to do. He's gonna get that taken care of, get things done. So standing in, we have the K-Zoo Guru, football sensei, Eric Hamilton.
Gentlemen, I am honored to be in the presence. Call me Ginobili because I'm coming off the bench and I'm going to get down with you guys tonight.
Love it.
We got a resident Ginobili in the house. We were talking off air before we came on, and we were talking about how Eric was like the Capadonna of RSG. Anytime he comes on, he kills it, and everybody's waiting for that album. But he always kills that guest spot. So thank you. We appreciate you sitting in with us. I'm going to quickly go through a rundown of tonight's show. And then we're going to get in. This is the intro to let you know you're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, the show for tonight. Doing a funky editorial, we're going to talk about the San Antonio Spurs and really put into perspective the trio of Duncan, Ginobili, and Pretty Tony, and Tony Parker. And really put it into perspective, where does this trio, as far as great teammates go, where do they fit in the all-time pantheon of great teammates? So we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about Popovich as a coach. Where does he fit all-time amongst the greatest coaches? And then we're going to talk about how long can they keep this run going. This has been a run that has extended throughout the last decade and into this early part of this next decade. And they don't look like they're slowing down too much. They look like they keep adding new pieces. We'll see how long they can keep it together. They're putting it on the Thunder as we speak. So we're going to check in on that during the funky editorial. Then we have Phil T. Sports PhD. He's going to dissertate on his top five hip-hop songs of all time. So he's going to give us his top five. We're going to check in with that, see what he's got in store for us. Then we're going to hit the five on the black-hand side. Now, this last week, NFL season upon us, Las Vegas came out with their over-unders on NFL wins for NFL teams. We're going to go through that in the five on the black-hand side. I've got five teams and the over-under that was set on their wins for the next upcoming season. We're going to get into whether or not we're taking the over or the under on these particular teams and what their wins are set at. Then we're going to go off the dome for a bit. That's the portion of the show where we kind of freestyle on several different topics. We may get into some the Miami Heat-Indiana series. Is that wrapped up? Now they're playing Boston, but we want to revisit that for a second because there's a lot that went on in that last week, you know, after we left you. So we want to check in on that. We also want to talk about the Indy 500. You know, PhD is a very diverse cat, and he's actually been to an Indy 500, and we want him to share that experience because he actually watched this year's Indy 500. And I don't know anybody else that did that, so I just want to hear about – I just want to explain himself for a moment. I just want to let that brother explain himself. Because he hit me up with text over the weekend about the Indy 500, and I'm like, man, I do not care about no cars driving in no circle. But he's had a profound experience at the Indy 500. He says it's definitely something that one of those things that you must put on your bucket list and one of those things that you must do before you leave this planet. So I take his word for it. You know, he's usually spot on, so I have to trust him. So I'm going to let him kind of sell us on the Indy 500 as an experience. Then we may get into Manny Pacquiao's anti-gay marriage comments, talk about the Pacquiao-Bradley fight that's slowly coming up for us. So we're going to check into that, maybe some NFL talk. Then we're going to get into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week, preview next week's show, hit you with the shutdown, and then take you in the after hours. So that's how we get down. But right now, we got to get the show started like we always do about this time.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin, right. Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, say it. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right, so for this week's funky editorial, I want to pass it to my man PhD. And PhD, please help us understand, when we talk about the San Antonio Spurs right now, they're the number one seed in the West, playing in the Western Conference Finals. They're up 1-0 on the Oklahoma City Thunder. They came from behind last in the first game. Oklahoma looked like they had the game wrapped up. San Antonio came out, guns blazing in the fourth quarter, dropped 39 points on them, took the lead, took the game, and left OKC walking out of the Alamo Dome, licking their wounds. Now, we have this trio of Duncan, Manu, and Pretty Tony Parker. They've been together since 2002-2003. And in that span, they've won four titles together. They're going for their fifth. They won three titles together. Duncan got one with Robinson before that. They're going for their fourth title as a trio. Duncan's going for his fifth with Popovich. When we talk about the great dynasties of NBA history, we're talking about, you know, Bird, McHale, Parrish. We're talking about, you know, Kareem, Magic, and Worthy. You know, we're talking about Isaiah, Dumars, and Rodman. We're talking about those great teams of all time. There's that core group of guys that defines those teams that we consider dynasties. And the Spurs have, these three guys have defined this team, and they've had an unprecedented amount of success in this current era. And these three players have been constants. While there's been a lot of change around them, these three guys have been constant. Where do you rank these guys, or where do you put these guys when you start to put them into context? Where do you put them in comparison to the other great conglomerates of teammates in the history of basketball?
Well, I think you start out with just putting them in the top 10. You say that they deserve to be somewhere in the top 10. Because whenever you look at a franchise that has won four championships over the course of a 10, 12, 13-year span, I mean, that's big. That's very big. The Pistons never did that. You know, Boston never did that during the Bird years. You know, I mean, this is big stuff. And then when you look at these three, you have to start looking at them like you do some of the other big tandems or trios in NBA history. But here's the problem. You talked about Kareem and Magic and Worthy in L.A. You talked about Motor City. You talked about Chi-Town. You talked about Beantown. But then we get to San Antonio. It's like the comment I made a couple of weeks ago. Roy Hibbert puts up the same numbers as Bynum, but we don't talk about him because his name is Roy Hibbert. You know, this is the problem we have with San Antonio. I put something out on Facebook that got a lot of chatter earlier this week is, why don't we look at the Spurs in the same reverence that we look at the Patriots in football? Why don't we look at Popovich the same way we look at Belichick? Because you look at their resumes, they're very similar in terms of the success that they've had. And the reason my response to that is, it's easy. You got Brady. Brady is the guy. Brady is the guy. He's with a supermodel. He's a flashy guy. And then you look at the counterpart, and you got Duncan. Duncan massages his teammates' heads. You know, I mean, it's not flashy, but effective. So these guys are playing excellent ball together. They played a beautiful game, to take a line from Scott Van Pelt. They played a beautiful, beautiful game. They move the ball around well. They're unselfish. They say and do the right things. They play the right way. They do their job, as Belichick would say. But historically, why don't we compare them to some of the greats? And I say, A, because they're in San Antonio. B, because they haven't won back-to-back. For some ridiculous reason, the same ridiculous reason why Charles Barkley will never crack anybody's top 10, because he didn't win a championship. Okay, and players who haven't won championships just only go so high on our meters. For some ridiculous reason, because the Spurs have never won a back-to-back championship, I think that's the biggest reason why we don't want to group them together with some of these other greats that you mentioned.
So, the KZU guru, we got him in the house, Eric Hamilton. Philly, I think you summed it up very well. I want Eric to follow that. Eric, what do you think of that? Phil laid it out pretty nicely. He feels like, hey, they're in San Antonio, and because they're in San Antonio, they don't get a lot of love. What do you think of that?
I think Phil hit it right on the head. You know, when I look at dynasties, you know, most of the dynasties that we know of, they have some ultimate players with a little bit of flair. So you go back to the 50s and 60s when the Boston Celtics were running the show. Now, Bill Russell and those guys weren't flashy, but they were on 11 rings in 13 years. You got to give them that dynasty respect. You move on to the 80s, you got the Lakers. They won five titles between 1980 and 1989. So you got the Showtime with Kareem and Magic Johnson. You've got, obviously, Jordan and his Bulls dominating the 90s, six titles in 8 years. And then at the beginning of the decade, you got Shaq and Kobe. Again, you have star power. Now, throughout then, from 99 on to 2007, you've got Tim Duncan. And Tim Duncan was able to win four rings in 8 years in that time frame. And as Phil mentioned, it's the lack of star power. It's the total lack of star power. Tim Duncan is a phenomenal player. He's going to go down as, if not the, one of the greatest power forwards in NBA history. But nothing about his game is exciting. It's boring, but he gets the job done. There's no flair to it. Probably most people that watch sports don't know Tim Duncan's name. And Phil made an excellent contrast with Tom Brady. With New England Patriots, Tom is a bona fide star. He's a stud. Everybody knows him. You know, he's the face of football. Again, you know, with Tim Duncan, it's just nothing sexy about him. He doesn't have that it factor, you know. You couldn't sell Tim Duncan because it's just so fundamentally sound. It's just, ugh. But again, I mean, that's what it comes down to. But, you know, realistically, in my opinion as well, you know, they rank up there as a dynasty because they have the rings to stand for it. I don't think that they're as great as some of the dynasties of the past, even the Shaq and Kobe Lakers. As you see, San Antonio did not win a ring during that time frame when Shaq and Kobe were together. So I think they are a dynasty, and Duncan is a bona fide star. Parker's an excellent point guard, and Ginobili is a phenomenal, you know, guard as well. But those two will not be in the Hall of Fame. So you've got really one Hall of Famer that's a deadlock for a Hall of Fame, and you've got two really solid players. So I think it all comes down to star power and the lack thereof. Tim is a boring player, but he is solid.
Now, according to the Game Changer, Eric, Manu Ginobili is a top 50 player ever. Ever.
Oh, wow.
Top 50. Now, I think the Game Changer had him at 49, 47, 50, but the top 50 defensive.
You say right now, top 50?
No, ever.
No,
including
top 50
Russell,
ever.
Ever. Defend yourself, Game Changer. Do it now, please.
Out of Europe, maybe? Top 50 players out of Europe?
Ready? Ready, set, and go. All right. Why is Manu Ginobili one of the top 50 players of all time? One, he's got three rings. All right. One, okay, this is a guy who has a career averages. All right. When you go per 36 minutes, his career averages are right on par. No, are right on par with everything that Paul Pierce has done. A guy that Phil, PhD, and D. Wills had in their top 50, deeply rooted in their top 50. Okay?
Yeah.
Ginobili has not played, he's only played two seasons in his whole career where he's averaged over 30 minutes a game. Okay? If he's playing the minutes that other guys are playing, because of his role in San Antonio, we don't look at him as one of the greats. But if he was playing 36 to 37 minutes a night, which he's not asked to do because that's his role, he is averaging 24, 25 points a game. And we look at him very different. And so what I'm looking at is what I see on the court and not just letting his numbers and then his role on his team define how I see him. He is, I mean, he's the reason they won that last game, right?
I agree.
Yeah.
If you look at his if you look at his player efficiency rating, it's right on par with a guy like Paul Pierce. Matter of fact, he has the third highest per 48 win share of any active player in the league career. So he makes a difference. But again, I think because of his role and San Antonio, if he was doing what he was doing in New York, even coming off the bench, if he was doing what he was doing in L.A., we would have a very different view of him. So I think that's why when I say Manu Ginobili is a top 50 player, people go, what? I get that. I understand why people don't have him in their top 50 or wouldn't consider him a top 50 player. But if you look at what he's done in his career and in the minutes he's done it at and the role that he's played, again, not a lot of guys are going to play that role either. Especially when they could be going someplace else and building up their brand, building up their profile. So I'm not going to knock a guy who obviously has top 50 skills. I mean, the things that he does as a lefty, attacking the basket, he can create for other guys. He can score on his own. He can shoot the three. There's not anything he can defend. There's nothing he can't do on the court. And he's done it at a high level all of his career. So that's why. That's I gave you some numbers. I gave you just some straight up what I see with Ginobili. That's why I think he's the top 50. And again, I know that's
wow,
not a popular
winning.
Name, but I ain't trying to be popular.
Wow, winning.
He does win games, I'll tell you that. All he does is win. I'll say that.
And that's what he's done his whole career since he's been in San Antonio. Is he's won. And, again, we got a guy who came into the league at 25. So we didn't get to – again, we don't have those early years. Right now, most basketball players, the statistics say that the information says that most basketball players physically are peaking at about 24 nowadays. Right, so they go up, they plateau at 24, and then we get what we get. This is a guy who continues to develop and age and get better with time. His best season came when he was 30 with the Spurs in 2007-2008. That was his best statistical season. He definitely, I think, is one of the top 50 players. Again, you name me something that the cat can't do on the court, and he doesn't do at a high level. I'll wait.
I knew that was coming. So that was the Manu Ginobili hour portion of the show done by the
Manu
Game Changer. That's right, the Manu Minute. The Manu Minute. All right, we can continue. You defended yourself well. You out on bail, okay?
I'm gonna put my swords up. But getting back to the lecture at hand. All right, we got Duncan, we got Manu, we got Tony Parker. This year, Tony Parker, I think when we talked last time, we had our resident NBA expert Justin Page on. He talked about Pretty Tony as being, you know, an All NBA. I think he had him All NBA first team, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Am I remembering correctly, PhD? You were there?
Yeah. Give me 30 seconds. I'll be able to pull that up for you.
I think he
vault.
Did. All right, we're going to let him go into the vote.
He finished in the top five in the MVP voting. I mean, the guy had a phenomenal year. I mean, I could definitely respect that. I mean, as far as point guards, I mean, he, Rondo, and Chris Paul, obviously Derrick Rose, you know, but he was injured this year, but they're getting it done. I mean, he finished top five, so you can make an argument that he would be first-team point guard, absolutely.
And see, that's the San Antonio effect that I think has people not believing Manu is a great player or Manu is one of the greatest players we've seen in the game. It's because, like, Tony, when has Tony Parker really been widely acknowledged? Guys that know, but I'm talking about widely acknowledged as a top five point guard in his career. Rarely. Why? San Antonio. And you have a guy who's been solid throughout his career, has been again, right there, knocking at the door, top five, maybe better than top five. Again, if he played somewhere else, he'd be viewed differently. But because he's in San Antonio, because of the way they play, the role he plays, the way nobody really dominates the ball in their system, in their schemes, the way that goes down there, nobody really views Tony Parker as an elite point guard. You know, when they talk about top point guards, they're going to rattle off Deron Williams, Chris Paul, Derrick Rose, Rajon Rondo, Russell Westbrook, you know, then people are talking about Chris Paul. I mean, I'm sorry, not Chris Paul, but Tony Parker. See, I forgot the brother's name in the middle of my conversation.
Yeah, Justin did have him.
Who
on
we
the
talking
first
about
team.
Again?
Practice. We're talking about practice, okay? That's what we're talking about. Not the game, but we're talking about practice.
Listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
Thank you, AI. I needed that reminder, man.
That's right.
From time to time, man. You need AI to just remind you, man, what we're talking about, man. We're talking about practice. But in all seriousness, if I were to make a comparison to a dynasty of the past, I think I would compare them to the late 80s Pistons, late 80s, early 90s Isaiah's Pistons. because it was Isaiah and Joe Dumars, who was a great player, but again, his numbers weren't amazing. He didn't really jump out at you, but he did all that other stuff really, really well. And then you had guys like Rodman, Lambeer, Buddha Edwards, John Sally, Benny Johnson, all those other guys who fit in around that centerpiece in Isaiah and were still great players, were still very good players, were above average players. They had certain things that they did at a very high level. That's what I see in San Antonio. That's, if I were to compare the San Antonio teams to a dynasty of the past, it would be the Pistons. Now, PAG, what do you think of that? You're a Pistons fan. You're a Zeke. You ride for Zeke. Not so much lately, but historically, you rode for Zeke. How do you feel about that comparison?
I like that comparison. I do. And when I take my Homer hat off, okay, and I'm such a big homer, I got to take my shoes off too and my socks and everything off. In some ways, an argument could be made that I would fight fiercely, but a strong argument could be made that the Spurs run is more impressive, easily more impressive than the Pistons run, just because of the length of time that they have been relevant and dominated. You know, with the Pistons, they had that rise. They had that rise where it took them a couple of years to get past the Pistons. They finally got past them. They won those two championships. And then Jordan came and kind of made them irrelevant. You know, so, I buy that argument every day of the week except for Sunday because I'm a homer.
My man. So, you know, we kind of have an idea of where Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker stand amongst the dynasties of yesteryear. Now, on to the conversation about Popovich. Popovich has worn two hats his entire tenure in San Antonio, where he's been the GM and the head coach. He's bought the ingredients and cooked the meal. Which is very difficult to do, especially in the NBA. And it's not a model that a lot of teams have followed. Now, he's had some guys who have in the organization who have worked with him, but he's worn that hat as GM. Where do we rank Pop all time? When you talk about Red Auerbach, Phil Jackson, you talk about guys like Chuck Daly, Pat Riley, where does Pop fit? Amongst that canon of coaches, because I think he's in the conversation when you talk about top five coaches ever. Now, I know that may sound crazy to some of the listeners out there because, again, it's the San Antonio effect. I'm going to pass this one to the KZU guru, Hamilton. What do you think about that?
Well, Coach Pop is a phenomenal, phenomenal coach. To do what this guy has done with this team, again, you have some very, very high-priced athletes and being able to get them to play and buy into a system. I mean, fundamentally, at any level, it's difficult to get the folks, the players to buy into the system. And he's been able to put his system in and put the players around. Now, go back in history a little bit, the acquisition of Tim Duncan when David Robinson was injured, and they kind of packed up the bag. A little bit different story. That's beside the point. Nevertheless, they got Tim Duncan, and they went on a tear. I'm not bitter about that at all. But, for what he's able to do, he's got to be right there with Auerbach and Phil Jackson. Now, I'm a Michigan guy myself, but the Detroit Pistons won two titles. I mean, two titles back-to-back. I'm not ready to put that into a dynasty's book, to be honest with you. Three rings, in my opinion, it takes to be a dynasty. So I'm going to put him ahead of the great Chuck Daly, even though I really like Chuck Daly. I ain't going to even front. But from what he's done, the personnel to wear the dual hats, I got Phil Jackson, Auerbach, and then I've got Pat Riley, and then I've got Pop right there. So I've got Pop as the best coach in the league right now and the most underrated coach because, there's several coaches that will get more acknowledgement over this guy, but what he's done, you can't argue with the success. So that's where I go, buddy. He is number four in my book.
Okay, so you got him at number four. PhD, where do you see Pop ranking in the PhD's all-time coach rankings?
Third. I put him third behind Arbach and Jackson. And that might throw some people off. And I even put him in a tie with third, at third with John Kundla, who was the coach of the Mike and Minneapolis Laker teams in the late 40s and early 50s, won five championships in only 11 seasons. And so Pat Riley has actually won one more championship. He's won five championship rings, and Pops only has four. But Riley coached 24 years to get those five championships, and Pop has only coached 15 to get those four. So that's why I put him ahead of Riley. And then you look at Phil Jackson and Arbach. They coached 20 years. They had 9-11 championships respectively. Every other year on average, they were winning the championship. That's just amazing. You know, same thing with Kundla. So I would put Pop ahead of Chuck Daly. It's tough. Everything inside of me is saying, no, that doesn't sound right, doesn't feel right. I'm going to ignore that and go with my, you know, go away from my heart and go with my head a little bit. And then when you look at the next tier, all these guys have won two championships. You're Red Holzman's with the Knicks, you have Bill Russell, Casey Jones, Chuck Daly. So I think Pop is certainly a cut above those guys. And, you know, one of the things, like you mentioned, a very important point, Marcus. Pop is the GM as well as the head coach. A lot of people don't know that. And the reason I think that that works is because where he's at, who his leader is, who his core group of guys are, okay? But the other reason is Pop is the highest paid coach in the league right now. When Phil Jackson retired, Pop's the highest paid coach. So I think one of the reasons that head coaches historically have struggled to coach modern age ball players since the 90s is because they're making a fraction of what their, first guy off the bench is making. You know, they're making $7 or $8 million a year, $5 or $6 million a year, and the coach is making half of that. Well, Pop's pretty much making as much money and slightly less than Duncan and Parker, but pretty much as much as just about everybody else on the team.
Well, and I think that puts him in a position where, you know, because when the coach isn't making as much as the other guys, he's expendable. You know, if they got to get rid of somebody, they're going to get rid of you first. Why? Because you cost the league. You're the cheapest. If they still got to pay you, they're going to pay you to walk. You know, so I think that helps out Pop a ton. I actually have Pop a third like you, Phil T, and I actually have Riley down a little bit because I don't count one of those titles, man, because he murked Van Gundy for one of them. Let's not forget. I don't count that one for Riley.
That's cold.
It was so high, he cold kicked Stan Van Gundy. It was like he fired him during the timeout. Van Gundy came back to the huddle after meeting with the assistants, and Riley was sitting there with the clipboard on the play. So, yeah, I don't count that one for Riles, man. But I have Papa Ed or Riley for that reason, man, because I think Riles, he stole one in Miami from Van Gundy. And just think about how differently we would view Van Gundy if he had one. Just one ring. Hey, one ring, because I think he's a very good coach, but not having that one ring, I'm sure he wants to do something there. If he caught Pat Riley on a back alley, he might do something to him. At least try. You know, they both kind of up there. But so that's the funky editorial. Again, you're listening to The Real Sports Guys. RealSportsGuys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. Now, we're going to transition into Phil T. Sports PhD's top five hip-hop songs of all time. Now, we like to do lists from time to time here with the Renegades, and we've done a top 20 hip-hop songs of all time. We've taken you through each of our top 15 songs. Now we're down to the last five. So we're each taking a week, unveiling our top five. And we got a bit of a surprise for PhD. So we're gonna lay that on everybody after he gives us his top five hip-hop songs of all time. Take it away, brother, man.
At number five, and I'll recap my top 10. At number 10, I had Biggie with Juicy. At number 9, I also had Notorious B.I.G. with Warning, Who Shot You. At number 8, I have The Message, Melly Mel. Number 7, Scenario, Tribe Called Quest with Busta Rhymes. Number 6, LL Cool J, I Need Love. Hamilton just laughing. Can we mute out of his mic, please? I mean, I haven't even got into my top 5 and cats laughing at me. What's up with that?
My problem. But it's your list. Keep it rolling. Keep it rolling. Don't mind
that. I mean, the peanut gallery's already, you know, goodness. Mercy. All right, at number 5. I've got Eric B. and Rakim, Paid in Full. Mm. Now this was, I was in high school, graduated from high school in the mid-90s, okay? This was a mid to late 80s song. I have an older brother that I used to bust into his room when he was at practice and just mess up, just scratch up and just do all the little things little brothers do, not on purpose, that his 45 records, the singles, and Eric B. and Rakim. That was one. On one side, it was Eric B. for president, and on the other side, it was Paid in Full. And that beat to this day, that beat, I mean, you just can't say beat. You got to beat. Okay? That beat is fire. It is hot. It is banging. It is everything, every other hip word, boom, that has happened between the mid-80s and today. This is all of that. All of that. Okay? Number 4, Dr. Dre and Snoop, Nothing But a G-Thing. The movie,
okay.
Movie was horrible. Deep Cover with Larry Fishburne, it was horrible. It was a very bad movie. Okay,
soundtrack's fire.
Right, I mean, because this was back in the day where we had soundtracks. Talk to my nephews now. One's entering his sophomore year in college. The other one's gonna be graduating in a couple of days from high school. And I asked him the other day, this movie's coming out. The movie that just came out with Gabrielle Union, first and only actor I could remember from that movie.
You don't even know the title of the movie, do you? I'm not going to press you on it. You got to answer that. You got to just keep it moving.
What is it? What men really want or what women... Think like a man. Think like a man, okay?
Yeah, there you go.
You had to save yourself.
Yeah. That movie, I asked my nephews, hey, you guys get the soundtrack for that movie? They just laughed at me. What do you mean, soundtrack? Now, Dr. Dre and Snoop, Nothing But a G-Thing. Like, this is back when cats had soundtracks, Above the Rim. Okay? Again, Deep Cover was a horrible movie, but this song, oh, man. I mean, this is back when the videos on BET and MTV, they showed clips from the movie.
They showed videos on MTV?
They used to, yeah. Believe it or not,
I know. Yeah. I'm just, they don't anymore.
Yeah. Right, old Fab Five Freddy, okay? So, this song, I remember being in 7th or 8th grade, Hillside Middle School. We had 10 or 15 minutes before classes start. We always hung out in the ping pong area when it was cold outside. And whenever somebody brought their little boom box, okay, their little box, Nothing But a G Thing was what was up. Number 3, Pete Rock and CL Smooth. Will they reminisce over you? D Wills broke this down beautifully a couple of weeks ago when it was in his top 20. When you hear them horns, you already know what time it is. Number 2, Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight. I'll be real honest, I didn't even know about Rapper's Delight until the Def Squad, consisting of Keith Murray, Eric Sermon, and Redman came out with their Rapper's Delight version of it, Death Squad Delight. And somebody said, wait a minute, you got to listen to Rapper's Delight. And I was DJing at the time, okay, you know, in college. And so I throw on that Death Squad Delight, and then I throw on that Rappers Delight. And, I mean, really, that would carry you for about 30 minutes, okay?
Right.
Very long, very extended song. But, you know, people that just rarely, just barely know hip-hop, you put on that song, they will know half the lyrics, enough lyrics to in that song to fool you as if they know all the lyrics, okay? Now, for my top song, I'm just ride with me for 48 seconds. Now, both the fellas on the line with me right now, I know you guys had the phone on mute, you had the microphone on mute, and you was all ready for that opening verse. First, when you hear this initial, the first couple are just... It just gets it going. And, the whole deep cover, I need to backtrack. Evidently, I got my songs and stuff mixed up. Nothing But a G Thing was out of the deep cover. So I'll just, everybody just forgive me. Long day. Ron Harper, Kanye, Cutting the Grass, forgive me. So that's my top five.
All right, so I like that, and all I'm gonna say is yes, with one more chance. You have that moment where when you were younger, you used to watch your uncles or aunties had that moment when they song came on, and they just kind of like they put both arms up, elbows out at about a 45 degree angle, and then they just kind of drop and come back up real quick. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
And they go, "Woo, that's my song." That's how I felt just now, man. It did something for me. All right, it did something for me. But we have a special surprise for you. I'm gonna just drop it on you like this.
This is D. Welsh with Phil T's top five rap songs of all time. My reaction to them. At number five, he had Nothing But a G Thing, Paid in Full. At number four, They Reminisce Over You, Troy. At number three, at number two, Rapper's Delight. And number one, One More Chance, the Notorious B.I.G. Obviously, I don't have a problem with Rapper's Delight. As you can tell from my top five lists, I believe it's a top five song, and it can go anywhere in there. It's one of those songs you can't talk about a list without having it on there. Three through five, I like these songs. I could see these songs as top 10 songs, not necessarily top five songs. Nothing But a G Thing, I could see that at number five where you have it. I can't argue there. I think it's an incredible song. Historically, it's a song that you could talk about how it changed how we looked at hip hop, that West Coast flavor, that G funk. That you can enjoy. One More Chance is probably the song I had the most issue with at number one, because in fact it's probably your number 9 and 10 in terms of Biggie songs. I would think might be better. Who Shot Ya and Juicy might be two better Biggie songs than that one. And when you talk about a number one hip hop song of all time, the question you have to ask yourself: can you tell the story of hip hop without that song? And I would argue that you can tell the story of hip-hop without One More Chance. In fact, I think One More Chance is probably one of those 12 to 15 songs. Probably you can knock I got five on it out at number 12. Maybe knock that off your top 20 and put it there. But at the end of the day, it's your list. And that's what makes hip-hop so great. That is your list. D. Will signing off.
Yes!
He had to bring it up. I got a five on it.
Right.
He's not going to let you live that one down, my man.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's like one of them bars. You know, we all married. It's like one of them barbs your wife throw at you. Just like, you had to throw it in, didn't you? You had to.
Right.
Right, you had to, but...
And it cut every time.
Yeah, it do. It gets you, I mean, it gets you going. It gets you, it's provocative, okay?
So your rebuttal to the rebuttal.
Well, I tell you what, D. Wells makes a very strong argument, as always, you know, yeah, and this one is one he had. I mean, he had a chance to go into the lab, the library, to really break it down and put together a compelling argument. And so at some point I will say it's my list, but I'll try to have a rebuttal for it. So, I mean, he brings up a strong argument here. A lot of y'all know I'm in psychology. Politicians do this a lot. Two-sided arguments, if you give credibility, if you recognize that your opponent has made a strong point, at some point it makes your rebuttal a bit stronger. And so that's kind of my approach right now because, you know, what he said,
we got a point.
You know, your top song, you have to ask the question, could hip-hop be what it is today without this song? And I'm asking myself, Rapper's Delight, probably not. Nothing But a G Thing, probably not. Paid in Full, probably not. My number one song? Yeah. So I'm just going to take one on the chin and just, you know, I mean, I'm going to do an Ortiz a couple of years ago and just not get up. Okay, just stay on the canvas with that one. So, D. Wills, you got that one. Nice job, my man.
Hey, nice job all around. I still think your list was solid. And like I said, One More Chance may not be the number one song of all time, but it's definitely one of those, again, it gives you that whoo moment, you know, that moment that drops you down to your knees a little bit and brings you back up. And that says a lot about any song, any jam. It's definitely a jam. So don't beat yourself up too much there, PhD. Again, at the end of the day, it's your list, brother. With that said, we're going to roll on into the five on the black-hand side. Again, you're listening to The Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio, www.realsportsguys.com.
Five, on the black-hand side.
Now, Vegas has released the over-under for win totals for NFL teams for the 2012-2013 season. We have five teams that we want to talk about. We got the K-Zoo Guru on the line with us tonight, holding us down, doing his best Capadonna, you know, coming in, his best Ginobili, his best Benny Johnson, coming in and holding us down off the bench tonight. So we got to talk some football when we got the K-Zoo Guru in the house. And so we're going to talk about, we got five teams, we got their win totals that's projected by Vegas, and each of us is going to take a turn whether or not we agree with, or whether we're going to take the over or the under on the win total that they have, that Vegas has set for these particular teams. First team up, Bounty Gate, the New Orleans Saints. Now this team is in a lot of turmoil. They without their coach all season, defensive coordinator for half the year. They're in a contract battle with their quarterback, who is, again, one of the top three quarterbacks in the league. Jonathan Vilma, their starting middle linebacker, is suing Roger Goodell for defamation. It's just a whole lot going on with this team right now. So I'm going to throw it to the K-Zoo Guru. Saints, New Orleans Saints, the over-under for the Saints is set at 10. You taking the over or the under, and why?
I'm actually taking the over on this. Let me explain a little bit why. So last year they went 13-3. Obviously they lost John Payton. Drew Brees hasn't signed. A little bit of turmoil. Jonathan Vilma, Will Smith are suspended. But they did pick up Curtis Lawson and David Hawthorne. So pretty solid linebackers. But my reasoning for saying the over is in looking at their schedule. Their schedule begins very, very easy. These are five, I'll say four out of the five are winnable games and should be easy winnable games. They start with the Redskins at home. They go to Carolina to face the Panthers. They come back home to face Kansas City. And then they got to go to Lambeau Field. That's where I'm giving them an L. And then to move back with the San Diego Chargers. And then they've got quite a few games after the second half. Week six is their bye, and then they're jumping into the second half of the season. Quite a few winnable games, Buccaneers, Broncos, the Raiders. I mean, there's quite a few games in there. So I see them getting to 11 wins with a possibility of 12. They won a few games without Sean Payton, with him being up in the coaching booth, and they were able to get it done. So I think they're still going to get it done. This year, again, they got a very, very friendly schedule for whatever reason. And, yeah, they'll get 11 wins.
Okay, THD, New Orleans Saints, 10 wins. You got the over or the under?
Under, too much drama, period.
Mm. So you don't think they can overcome it?
Absolutely not. They have way too much going on. I mean, soap operas. I mean, Young and the Restless. Young and the Restless has less plots than this team has going on right now. So, you know, I'm keeping it short and sweet. Short and sweet. Absolutely not. I'm taking the under. 10 wins. They will not get there. Way too much to overcome.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to take the under on this one as well. Eric, you raised some great points. I just think I'm with Phil. There's just too much going on, and there's such a thin line between these NFL teams that the slightest disadvantage can really hurt a team if they're not where they need to be focus-wise. And that's not saying that all this stuff is going to spill over into the season, but it's definitely affecting their off-season preparation. Mm-hmm. And I think that continuity – and just that feeling of getting ready for a season, I think they just got a different taste in their mouth than everybody else right now. And maybe that does propel them to rise above it. But, again, there's such a slim margin of error in the NFL. I can see them getting to 10 or going under. But I have a hard time seeing them excel at the level that they've excelled in the past few years, just given everything that's around them. I think this is a year where they hit a bump. And then they get back at it next year with a renewed kind of focus, and they really get into it. But I like your points. You really broke down their schedule, and that's why we got you on here, my man. Number two.
Yes, sir.
The New York Jets. Over under for wins for 2012 set at 8.5. Mr. Hamilton, what you got for us?
Well, the Jets, on the other hand, you know, they had a bad year. Last year they went 8-8. They shored up the secondary a little bit. They picked up Jeremiah Bell from Miami, the safety, and they also picked up LaRon Landry from Washington, the Redskins. He's coming off an injury. But so I think they're going to shore that up. I think 8-8 was a very bad year for them this year. Now, this Tim Tebow experiment, you know, a little bit off the topic, but this Tim Tebow experiment, I think it's going to be a disaster waiting to happen. It's going to be a lot of pressure on Mark Sanchez to perform. And the Tebow mania is going to go crazy. By week four or five, I got a feeling that Tebow is going to be knocking on Sanchez's door. With all of that craziness being said, I still think they're going to beat 8.5 wins. I think they're going to get to 9. And looking at their schedule, again, they've got a little bit of a flux as far as their schedule, but they've got a lot of winnable games at home. And they're pretty good at home. They start out with the Bills. You know, again, they got to go to Pittsburgh, but then they're coming back against the Dolphins. So they've got a pretty tough front half of the schedule. It gets a little bit better with the Seahawks and Rams after their bye. So I think that's going to be enough to still get to 9 wins at least, because I think last year was a terrible year for them. Again, this Tim Tebow experiment scares the mess out of me because I think it's going to cause a lot of internal bleeding. But I got them getting to 9 wins.
I'm frightened too. And quiet as kept, Tim Tebow know what he did. He knows exactly what he did when he went to New York. And he knows he's gonna drive everybody mad for the next for the next 8-9 months once he gets going, because everything is a bigger deal in New York, and he understands that. You know, it's that San Antonio effect. You know, if those guys were doing what they were doing in New York City, or Jeremy Lin doing what he did in New York City, it becomes a global story. So if Tebow can have a modicum of success that he had in Denver, the internet might explode. He might break the internet. I guess I have to take the over. I'm saying they're going to get about 9 wins. I'm saying they're going to go 9-7. They were a little down last year. But I think, again, that margin of error is so slim. Distraction, distraction, distraction with this team all the time. They create their own distractions. And then you bring in a living, breathing distraction in Timothy Tebow. And their defense is going to be solid. Their run game is going to be solid. I still think they have a very good team. I think they're a good team. But I agree with you. Looking at their schedule, you know, they have the Colts at home, which is a game I think they should win. I think they could pick off one of those games with San Francisco and Houston at home. But at the same time, I think that they're also right to lose. They're gonna lose some games this year because they're gonna be distracted. I think without Tim Tebow, I'd say this is a 10-win team. 10, maybe 11. Maybe they can eke out 11 wins with Tim Tebow in the fold. With all the distractions that come with that, with their locker room already being the way it has been, I got to go with 9 wins. I'm docking them 2 from what I would predict normally due to the Tebow effect. I'm dishing it off to PhD.
I'm taking the under, fellas. I'm going against the grain here. And, you know, for the reasons that both you and Eric, Marcus and Eric, both highlighted this Tebow thing. If Mark Sanchez plays at the highest level he's played in his career, plus a bump, okay, he's playing at a Pro Bowl level, they will still be yelling for Tebow. Still. Unless he's putting up Aaron Rodgers numbers from last year, and the team starts out 6-2, 7-2, 8-2, 8-3, they're gonna be yelling for Tebow, and so it, you know, it's kind of like a situation. It's in a no win situation. It seems as if for Sanchez, and you know, as the game changer likes to call him, Sanchez check down. You know, I think he's gonna be pressing too much, trying to do too much, and that's gonna lead to more turnovers, in my opinion. I think the second reason I'm taking the under is the Bills. I believe the Bills are the real deal this coming year. And with the Bills being in their same division, I don't think they split with the Bills. I think the Bills take both these games. I think the Patriots take both the games. Yet it's early. You're down 4 already. And you need, you know, so that's why I take the under. Now, some of these other games, I think based on last year, may be winnable, but I think the Seahawks are going to be much better. And, again, I was just 1 year late on my Rams prediction. So I think the Rams are going to be tough, especially at home.
Okay. Now, you touched based on the St. Louis Rams, which is our number 3 team. And Vegas has St. Louis set at 6. For the over-under. I'm going to jump in on this one first, and I'm going to go with the over on this one. I'm going over 6 wins for St. Louis. I think St. Louis is a 9-10 win team. I think PhD went out on a limb last year and picked them to win their division. He also took a couple more steps out on that limb and forgot his parachute. Picking Sam Bradford for MVP.
Oh.
Now, I know he's sitting there looking like, why are you bringing up old stuff? But
they,
I
are who we thought they were. They are who we thought they were. They are who we thought they were.
And we let them off the hook.
That's right.
I think you were on them a year early. I think this is the year where we see them put it together. They went through a very rough year last year. Sam Bradford was not healthy. But I think that year allowed the organization to kind of reassess what was going on around Sam Bradford and really realize they need to really invest in their offensive line. They really need to invest in building up their offensive line. They made some moves. I thought they had a really smart draft. We'll see what it looks like on the field over time, but I thought that they maneuvered the draft really well. They got some pieces that I think they're going to help. And I also think the biggest thing that happened was they brought in Jeff Fisher. And Jeff Fisher, to me, is one of those guys who is like a Stan Van Gundy of the NFL, where the guy has had success. He figures it out. He figures out how to win. And I think he's going to have that kind of success in St. Louis. He had a long tenure in Tennessee where they experienced a lot of success, got him to a Super Bowl, didn't get a chance to win a Super Bowl. But every year his teams played above what you predicted them to play at. They always outperformed their roster. He always got the most out of his roster. And I think that's what we're going to see this year with the St. Louis Rams. I expect them to challenge for the NFC West title. I think they're going to be right in the mix with San Francisco. So I'm taking the over. Mr. Hamilton, where do you stand on that St. Louis Rams at 6 wins?
You know, bro, you made some good points. This team is bad to me. This is just bad team to me. I don't see it. I don't see them getting the 6 wins. I see them maybe at 4. I like Jeff Fisher. He's a phenomenal coach. He is going to bring some improvement. Sam Bradford, when he was out there last year, he was not making good reads. It actually felt like the guy regressed. I know he had some injuries last year, but I didn't see any major moves that would let me know they're headed in the right direction other than bringing Jeff Fisher in. With the schedule out here, they're going to start out with an L against my Lions, and it's going to be all downhill from there. I don't see 6 wins. If they pull it out, I'd be astonished, but I got them at 4 to maybe 5 wins max. Bad football.
Okay. So we see that a little bit differently. I get that. I can understand that. Again, they're in flux, but I got them shooting up. PhD, I guess you're the tiebreaker.
I'm taking the over strongly.
You really don't have much choice. Given what you had last year.
I'm taking the over. I'm not gonna go how far over, listeners. You got to tune back in August. Okay. But
championship or bust, Phil.
The premise, the reason is because Bradford has something to prove. He has something to prove. You know, they just adjusted my man's contract down a couple hours ago. Yeah, they just adjust, you know, it was a mutual agreement. We know how that works. A mutual agreement. Moderately adjust his contract down. The details are yet to be released. But I think he needs, I think he has something to prove. And for that reason, I think they certainly get 6 wins, 7 wins easily.
Okay. So you're taking the over on that one. Now, sliding into the next team we got. We have a team that made a little bit of news today, a little bit, with Cam Newton. We have the Carolina Panthers and Cam Newton. Cam Newton came out today and said that last season he was a bad teammate. I hate to see this brother as a good teammate. You know what I'm saying? You know, he was saying he was questioning his own maturity. Just saying that he wasn't where he needed to be as far as his ability to handle adversity last season. So, now, Vegas has the Panthers. With that said, Vegas has the Panthers set at 7. PhD, Where are you going with that, over or under?
I'm taking the over, and one of the biggest reasons I'm taking the over is because I think the Saints are a 4-5 win football team this year. And that NFC South has been tough. They have a lot of emerging teams with Tampa Bay, Atlanta. You got the Saints and, of course, the Panthers, who we're talking about right now. And all four of these teams have quality quarterbacks, especially when, you know, assuming you consider that Breeze will be back. But it seems like when one team has a great season, another team that's projected to do well, i.e. the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year, you know, they suffer. So I think that the Panthers benefit from, A, the Saints having a poor season, and B, Tampa Bay continuing to struggle.
Okay. Guru from KZoo. Well, how do you see this playing out for the Panthers?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big Cam Newton fan. I really, really like the guy. He's a phenomenal talent. Last year they were 6-10. Only things I've seen that they picked up is Mike Tolbert from San Diego. He's just going to convolute the fantasy football mess again in Carolina, but that's a different story for a later show. You know, I got them getting to 7-8 wins, so I'm going to go over. Again, in looking at their schedule, you know, again, it's kind of hard because you got those teams like Tampa Bay. Are they going to bounce back this year? You know, I expect the Falcons to have a really good year. I think they're going to put it all together. They were kind of hungry on Julio Jones, so they, you know, went bananas on him. But off the topic of this particular discussion, I like them getting to 7-8 wins, so I'm going over.
Ooh, this was a tough one. Going through their schedule, I was trying to find places where they could eke out some wins. You know, and usually I try to look at advantages at the quarterback position in the games. Who has the better quarterback? Now, of course, there are a lot of other factors that go into play. But when you're trying to predict, you got to use something. You got to ground yourself with something. So that's what I choose to ground myself with. And I think I'm going to have to go with a push on this one. I think they're going to land right at about 7. I think depending upon with injury and other stuff that goes on during the season, they may be able to squeak out some more. I'm with Phil in that usually in that division, as one team goes up, another team comes down. And with me feeling like the Saints are not going to perform as well as they have in the past, that's going to open up a few wins there. I think Tampa Bay is going to take a step a bit. They're not going to be as bad as they were last year, but I think they're going to be more competitive. And I think Atlanta's going to be solid. I think they're going to be the best team in that division, and they should win their division. And I got Tampa and Carolina kind of fighting for that second spot. I don't know what that's going to look like. It depends on the jump that Cam makes. If Cam continues to go in the direction he's going, they could easily go with the over. I could easily go over on this one, but I'm going push. I'm going to go even at 7 just because I can't call it right now. I just can't.
Wow.
I know I'm taking the punk way out, going with the push. But I'll push it and go 7.
I mean, Eric,
go ahead.
Eric, are we going to let this slide? The push?
I didn't think that's the way you guys rolled on the show. I know that I'm
just
a featured artist.
All right.
Yeah, I know I'm just a featured artist, right, but right. I didn't think that's the way y'all rolled on the show.
We got you.
He's going to call you out.
He said, man, you got to redo your verse.
Yeah.
He just tells me I got to redo my verse.
Goodness.
He said, you need to turn around and go back in the
pool,
man.
We need more dogs.
All right.
We need more dogs. We need
right
more
on.
Dogs.
Right
we
on.
We need more
okay,
dogs,
so,
man.
So I'm going to go over. I'm going to go ahead and go over. I'm going to say 8-9 wins. I'm going over. Fine. I had to redo my verse. I'm going over. I'm going back in the booth, cutting a new verse. All right. Now, moving on to team number 5. We have the Denver Broncos with Peyton Manning in tow. They're ready to roll. Peyton's doing his Peyton thing. You know, he probably learned the playbook in about 10 minutes. He's getting receivers going. You know, fantasy guys are licking their chops. You know, guys are overrating Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas already. You know, so it is what it is in Denver. Vegas has them at 9.5 wins. Vegas has them at 9.5 wins. Keizu Guru, 9.5. Over or under?
Under. And I don't even think this one's going to be close. Y'all might look at me crazy at the end of the season, but last time Peyton Manning came off an injury, I believe he started the season 1-4, and that was off of a knee injury. So learning a new system and not having, in my opinion, not having the personnel as far as a good passing game, passing receivers, I think he's going to struggle. And then to add on to that, this brutal first half schedule is going to just kill Peyton's confidence. He's starting out the Steelers, Falcons, Texans, Raiders, Patriots, and Chargers. You could realistically go into the bye week 1-5.
I'm looking at that myself.
I mean, this is they set him up to for failure this first half of the season. That's bad.
And you got the Saints on the other side.
Yeah, then you got the Saints on the other side. The Bengals are good. You know, I mean, you could realistically get blasted this season. And I don't see 9 wins. I don't know if I see 7, but I hate to doubt Peyton Manning, but this is a brutal schedule. I don't think I've seen a schedule this bad in years.
PAC, what say you?
Blame it on Tebow. Blame it on Tebow, man. You know, because they made the playoffs, they get this tougher schedule, man.
The playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
And so I don't think the playoffs is in their picture. But still, I'm like, whoa, on this one. I don't know about over and under. I'm right on the line. And keep in mind, this is the same guy, me, okay, that picked Peyton Manning in the 3rd round last year at my fantasy pick, fantasy draft, because I just knew that Peyton was going to play and play well, okay, 3rd round. I picked him up. So with that being said, I'm going to go over. Mm. I'm going to go over. Not by much, but I can see them winning 10 games. And the biggest reason is because of that defense, man. If they stick, I think if they maintain the philosophies that they kind of use with Tebow, I mean, they don't – obviously you don't have to be as limiting – with Peyton Manning, even a 70-80% Peyton Manning that you had to be with Tebow. But if you keep the focus on your defense, running the ball, throwing when you need to, play action fake, I think this defense, you know, is built to win games if the offense can get them 17 to 20 points. So this is why I'm going to go over.
Yeah, I'm rolling with the guru on this one. I got to go under. Just looking at the schedule, it's going to take as much as I like Peyton, and I think Peyton's going to bounce back this year. I still don't know who their running back is going to be. I mean, does Willis McGahee have anything left? And I think you need that for them to be effective. Again, Peyton has never really – Peyton's style, that quick strike, get a score easy, has never really benefited defense because they spend a lot of time on the field. Now, Denver's defense is definitely – better than the Colts' defense most years. There were a couple years where the Colts were solid on defense. The schedule looks really tough, man. And Tebow did that. That's all Tebow. And it was going. Tebow lucky he got out while he did, because it was going to be a crash and burn year for Tebow mania, because he was not finna be winning. Where's that Charlie Sheen clip? He was not finna be winning, okay?
That's
right. He's gonna do the opposite of winning, all right? I mean, yeah, the schedule is super tight, it's super tough. They don't have a cupcake. I mean, the weakest teams they play are in their division, and those are always tougher games to begin with because the teams know you so well. So I don't see them getting that. I'm going under. I'm going 5 to 6 wins max. 5 to 6 wins max. And I know that's blasphemy when you have Peyton Manning as your quarterback, but if there was ever a year to doubt Peyton Manning, this is it. And he'll probably prove me wrong, and you'll be able to play the tape in September or November or whenever whenever they get past that threshold. But the guru was right, man. They could go into the bye week 1-5 yeah. or even 0-6, and they could come out of it. Yeah, they may not see a win till Kansas City in Week 12. And that's a road game, dog.
I tell you what, I got to clear it out. I got to clear it out and give it to Hamilton. Now, Eric, you have a very unique disdain for No'Shawn Moreno. And, you know, recently a news report came out the past 24 hours that he's fighting for a roster spot. And as soon as I saw that, I thought you were smiling somewhere. You were happy about it. Can you let the listeners know about your frustration with No'Shawn?
You know, No'Shawn and I have a little relationship going on. You know, I drafted this guy to be, I think, my second running back. And it was not last year, but the year before, I believe, in the playoffs. Okay, and I believe it was Thompson Riders, PhD, is what you guys know.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs.
Yeah,
you kidding
me? In the playoffs. Yeah, in the playoffs. And I end up losing by 3 points. No'Shawn Moreno got in the game. I actually had a DirecTV piece on, so I was watching the red zone, and he picked up like 2 points. And then I didn't see the guy for the rest of the game. Not knowing where he was, he got injured. Like normal, he got injured, and he blew my playoffs. So I was out of there. I lost to PhD. I give him props, but No'Shawn, I'll never have you on my roster if you're the last running back on earth. I'll leave my roster spot blank before I do that again.
Yeah, that bitterness. I knew that bitterness would come out. Yeah.
Hey, fantasy football will do that to you, man. It'll have you swearing off players, man. I got a few guys on my list that I just will not mess with ever again. Deshaun Jackson, I'm looking at you. With Deshaun Jackson, and we going to go fantasy football for a moment, listeners, so just stick with us. Again, you listen to the Real Sports Guys. RealSportsGuys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, and we finna have a fantasy football moment, all right? We all gonna get a moment to complain about one guy, all right? Eric Hammond, No'Shawn Moreno, Deshaun Jackson is mine, and I'm finna go in on him for a second, all right? The reason I will not mess with Deshaun Jackson anymore is he cost me a playoff spot the year I had Donovan McNabb as my quarterback. Deshaun was on the opposing team. No, the opposing team had the defense that they were going against. So McNabb throws a touchdown, with a perceived touchdown to Deshaun Jackson. I'm about to call him a name, Deshaun Jackson. And before Deshaun Jackson gets in the end zone, this fool flips the ball. And so I'm watching this game with a playoff spot on the line. And I'm looking, and I'm watching. And I saw it when it happened. I was like, I don't think he crossed the goal line. And I'm like, okay, please don't review it. Please don't review it. Please. And they started reviewing. I was like, no, he didn't cross it. So I'm looking at my score. Man, I'm looking. I got the points right now. I got the points because they counted as a touchdown. I sat there and watched the points come off the board, man. Watched the playoff spot go down the toilet because Deshaun Jackson wants to be an idiot. And now realize you have to cross that little white line with the ball for it to be a touchdown. So not only did he hit me with a double whammy because the defense that I was going against didn't lose any points, but then Donovan didn't gain any points, and then they wound up running the ball in the end zone anyway. It just made me. So Deshaun Jackson, I can't mess with him. And he had a horrible season last year anyway, and I was glad I did not draft that brother. I can't mess with that dude no more. So that's he's on my list. PhD, give me one.
I'm going to pass, man. My blood pressure's at a good level. I just don't want to mess with it.
I'm not going to mess that up. All right. So that was the five on the black hand side. Again, you're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. Now we're going to move into a little section of the show we like to call Off the Dome. You know, we're true hip-hop heads around here, and one of the key elements of hip-hop is the freestyle and being able to be agile verbally and sink on your feet in the heat of battle. And that's what Off the Dome is. All right, these are topics that I'm just going to throw out to the fellas, get that raw, uncut perspective. And you got to be agile on your feet. You got to be quick on your toes, or you might get dropped. You might get yanked off the stage. So we're going to go into Off the Dome. First topic up in this section of the show, we got to touch base on this whole Indiana Pacers series. Last time we were with the listeners out there, the RSC Nation, last time we were with you, the Pacers were actually up 2-1 on the Heat. Or I think they were tied 2-2. My bad. They were tied 2-2. The Heat were coming off a win where LeBron went nuts and D-Wade woke up. And in that game five, things got real chippy. All right, you had the Hansborough foul on D-Wade that drew blood. D-Wade left with a little cut over his eye. You had Haslam, who was already nursing the cut. He came back, retaliated. Got a Hansborough with the two-hand takedown. Looked like some Coco Beware would have pulled a junkyard dog or somebody. Took him down nice and easy. Laid him down to sleep. And then later in the game, you had what was probably the most egregious of all of the problematic plays in the series. Dexter Pittman taking out Lance Stephenson, who earlier on in the series, I think it was before game four or game three, had got into an altercation with Juwan Howard. And I know you're thinking, Juwan Howard's still alive? Yes, Juwan Howard's still alive. Not only is he still alive, he's rolling up on people. So Juwan Howard rolled up on Lance Stephenson, who's probably about 16, 17 years younger than him, and told him, yeah, I got one more in me, young boy. Squared up on him. Anyway, so Stephenson got his, I guess you could say, from Dexter Pittman, who basically told on himself when he winked at a teammate on camera, winked at a teammate after the play. At that moment, you knew he was going to get a heavy suspension or at least a heavy fine. So what that all of that extracurricular activity resulted in Miami losing Haslam for game six and Pittman for three games, but he doesn't play anyway, so it really wasn't a loss. He gets to take a break. You know, he gets to wear a nice suit to the games. So I'm gonna toss this one to PhD. What did you make of that series, and how did that series finish out to you, and how do you see that affecting the playoffs going forward?
Well, first of all, I hope Pittman wears nice suits and he doesn't go the Chris Bosh route with peach pants. Bosh, what are you doing? What are you doing, man? Really, a blue blazer and pink pants, peach pants, orange pants, whatever you're going to call it, man. That's not helping. That's not helping you, okay? All right, I'm back, okay. So I like that series, that Miami and Indiana series. It took me back to the 80s, early 90s when – man, playoff basketball, these teams didn't like each other. There was no question of whether, okay, these guys went to college together, or these guys, you know, I saw them in these commercials, are they having dinner together? No, I mean, these two teams, they didn't like each other. They didn't. Like Cedric said, you know, these two gangs genuinely do not like each other, but they're not going to fight. They're going to break dance. So, I mean, these... they genuinely do not like each other. So I kind of liked it, and I liked the way that the officials kind of let them have at it for a while. You know, the league stepped in and did some suspensions, and that kind of cleaned it up. But I liked the way they were going at it. I think we got on, you know, Everybody has that token in the back of their pocket to get on the anti-Miami Heat bandwagon as soon as they look down. So everybody was on them when, you know, Indiana got up 2-1. And so, you know, I think all that added to it. You know, man, in Indianapolis, Conseco, I don't know if they call it Conseco anymore, Fieldhouse, but, I mean, that just looks like a high school arena. You know, I mean, it just looks like a barn, man. You know, where you know, I think back to Spike Lee, man, when he made all those comments back in the day, back when Reggie Miller was still playing, you know, when he needed security in there, man. It just took me back to those days where the Pacers were relevant. They had a hostile crowd. And to me, I love watching it. I love watching that series. And, you know, in a way, these suspensions, none of the stars got suspended. So it's kind of like no harm, no foul. Haslam was kind of the biggest guy to get suspended, but they won game 6 when he was out. So you kind of leave that argument alone. But I liked it, and it added intrigue. You know, that was a game that I had, like, I couldn't DVR that game. I couldn't be behind 5 or 10 minutes because people were texting me left and right about that series. So I liked it. I think it was good.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. It took me back. You could tell the dudes when they didn't like each other. And I hope it's the start of something. I hope that, you know, I hope they put them on the schedule early in the season next year and they get to go at it early on. To renew that rivalry early in the season where that bad blood is still there. I like when teams have bad blood. You know, I kind of miss that where, you know, like you said, you know that these guys aren't buddy-buddy. They're not going to be spending the night over each other, just having sleepovers, you know, playing spend the night with your buddy. You know, we all did that as kids. I'm spending the night at little Terry house tonight. You know, that's what these guys do. You know, they fly into town and they stay at the guy you're playing against house. You know, he stay in his guest room, eat his food. Nah. These two teams did not like each other. They wanted to take each other down, and I love watching it. Now, did they get a little extra? Yeah, they did. But it was all within the flow of extraness. In the playoffs, there's going to be some extraness. Guys are going to hit the deck. Guys are going to get on the ground. Guys are going to be bleeding. That's what's supposed to happen. Did anybody haul off a swing on somebody? Nah. Hansbrough came in. He got what he got. That's what happened. I didn't have any problem with that. The only problem I had with it was I felt like they should have called it a flagrant 2 in the game because Haslam did not go for the ball. unless the ball had blonde hair, he did not go for the ball at all. So I thought it should have been a flagrant 2 and left alone. Pittman, he got what he got. You know, he got what he needed to get. But I love this series. Again, it was must-see TV. You're right. Everybody does have a token to ride on the Hate the Heat train. You know, I got first class seats. From time to time, I will jump on the Hate the Heat train. I'm not on it right now because LeBron and D Wade are balling, and I think that's the one residual effect that series is going to have on the rest of the playoffs. In my opinion, is that LeBron and D Wade are now locked in, and it's going to be amazing to see how they continue to progress. Now, Eric. You know, they're doing this without Bosh. Do you think Bosh is going to come back and mess up the flow? Or is Bosh going to add to what they're doing? How do you feel about that?
Well, I definitely think he's going to add to it. Bosh is, he's got a very unique style, almost European. And I think it flows good with the way that those boys operate. Bosh enables them to do different things than what they could do now. You know, they have nobody to really high pick and roll. If you notice back in the Indiana series, Hibbert really didn't need to defend the big guy on that pick and roll like in those earlier games. Once Bosh went out, nobody else had the ability to shoot at that size. So Bosh is going to add a different dimension. I don't think that Boston laid an egg this last game, but I doubt if you're going to see Ray Allen miss that many free throws, Paul Pierce not shoot well. You know, I don't think the big three are going to pull that kind of stuff. But when you get to the finals, against the San Antonio Spurs, who are just dominating Oklahoma right now, when you get to the point that you're battling these guys or battling the Oklahoma City Thunder, you're going to need a big guy that's going to be able to stand in there, pop some jumpers, do some different things. Because, again, Miami, they're not very deep at all. Both of the guys on the West Coast or the, you know, the Western Conference teams, both of them are deep. You know, 6-7 San Antonio is about 8 people deep. You know, so, yeah, they won't need him now, but they will definitely need him when it's time for the playoffs. And I think he'll fit in well, and they'll get the job done.
Hey, yeah, in true guest appearance fashion, dog, you just dropped some gold on us. And what I'm talking about is when he said he's got a different style, he's almost European. That's only your intro, dog.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a Capadonna moment right there. My man said he's got a different style. He's almost European. He said that about a 6'10" black dude. That's going in your intro, dog. The Kazu Guru. He's got a different style. He's almost European. We're running with that one, bro. I love it. Well, I love it. We are definitely running with that one. You listen to the Real Sports Guys. Oh, man. www.realsportsguys.com, RG Renegade Radio. We're in the midst of Off the Dome, and the KZU guru, Eric Hamilton, just dropped some gold on us real quick. But absolutely, I feel you. I think the Heat are going to need his services as they get further down the line and deeper into the playoffs. If I was him, I think they can handle the Celtics, because right now the Celtics they're not strong in the post. They got KG playing center. They don't really have anything behind them. Shout out to Greg Steensma, former Wisconsin Badger. I'm glad that he's in the league, but he ain't scaring me. I still go at him. He's a body, but I don't think he's a force. I don't think he's scaring LeBron or D-Wade or going to prevent them from attacking the cup. Another residual effect of that Pacers series, and I think we saw it in game one of that Boston Heat series, is that you're not going to be able – I don't think you're going to be able to be physical with the Heat anymore. I don't think you're going to be able to. Anytime Boston said anything, or even just kind of like getting their face, anytime Boston said anything last night, they got teed up. You know, and I think because of in the Indiana series getting out of hand a little bit, I think in the eyes of the league, maybe that was a little too much in their opinion. I liked it. We all liked it. That's RSG approved. But I don't know if the league necessarily approves of it. I think you're going to see that Boston isn't going to be able to, because I think one of the strategies to beat the Heat is to bully them, and that they'll back down and that they don't want that. You know, they don't want none of that. And, you know, the Heat are that pretty boy who drives a nice car, who gets all the girls, but you question his tough. You question whether he can throw hands. And that's how everybody comes at him. They try and pull their card. And I don't think the league is going to let them do that anymore. And that's what when all those technicals were getting called on Boston, when Ray Allen got the T, KG got the T, you know, even you know, LeBron laughing in KG's face at the end of the game. You know, I think that's just a different vibe right now with that team, and I don't think they're going to let you bully them, and I don't think the league is going to let it get out of hand, because the league does want to protect its stars, and they don't want guys getting, you know, marquee guys getting dropped. And I think they kind of shuddered a little bit when they saw what was going on in that Heat series. So I think that may be a residual effect that carries over into the rest of the playoffs, especially with that particular Heat team, because the refs had a quick whistle last night with the Boston guys. Anytime Rondo got one for saying something or for pushing one of the guys out of bounds, they just had a real quick whistle with anything extra. I think that you're going to continue to see that. So that's kind of where I see that going.
So, Marcus, I got to ask you, Little Terry, you used to have a hang out with a guy named Little Terry?
I mean, we were all little back then, you know what I'm saying? But that's what it was. It wasn't like I was, you know, 18, 19 hanging out with a cat named Little Terry. I was like 10, 11, man. Everybody was little. Right?
Okay.
All right. I appreciate the clarification. I want you having any misrepresented thoughts about the game changer floating around in your head. I appreciate that. Yeah. That's how we do things, man. We get clarification. We get clarification around here. You got some questions, just ask them. We all family. All right. So, Brother PhD, now, last year, you had a very interesting experience. You went out to the Indy 500 and saw it live. Now,
yeah.
I've never been to the Indy 500. I don't know if I really plan on going. You recommend it. I trust you. I need you to explain to us your experience. And you also watched it on TV. You watched cars driving a circle on TV. I need you to explain that to the people. So have at it.
Yeah, so, you know, about, I don't know, a year and a half ago, one of my partners, my man Troy from ATL, he gave me a call and said, hey, man, my brother lives in Indianapolis. A few of us are going to go to the Indy 500. Never been. You know, it's something you got to do out here. The first thing that grabbed me was that at the Indianapolis Speedway, you're looking at 400,000 people that typically come. It's typically a sellout. I think this year was one of the first time in the last decade it wasn't a sellout. Super Bowl in Dallas, they had 110,000 people. Most people ever watch the Super Bowl live. Again, Indianapolis Speedway, 400,000 people. So when you're there, it just overwhelms you with the amount of people that are there. You know, I didn't know anything going in. I didn't know much about racing. I didn't know anything about racing. Fortunately, one of the guys that went with us, he grew up with it. All five of us, African-American guys. You know, so we were all a little skeptical. You know, we're not very well represented within that sport. But I tell you what, I left thinking this is pretty awesome. And one of the biggest things that I took away is a strategy. It's almost like baseball. And I grew up playing baseball, and a lot of my friends as well are very skeptical about baseball. You know, but when you're watching playoff baseball, and a plug for the Inside the Park show coming on Wednesdays at 8:30 Central, realsportsguys.com with RJ, Hank, and Mike. They're doing an awesome job. But with baseball, there's so much strategy that goes in the last couple of innings. You know, matchups, pitching matchups, righty versus lefty. In racing, you know, you think about the, you know, conserving fuel. When do you come into a pit? It's a yellow flag. Do I come in? Do I stay out? You know, do we put four tires on? Do we only put two? All this different stuff you learn. And there's a big difference between Indy, NASCAR, and what they do over in Europe. I can't remember the name of that league over there. But to me, just the strategy that goes into it, and then the teamwork. When you look on pit row, man, you got seven or eight cars coming in. These cats are changing four tires, putting in gas in like 9 seconds. How can you not be impressed with that? The teamwork, the coordination that goes into it, where oftentimes all you hear about is a driver, almost like it's golf. Like it's tennis, like it's an individual sport. But that's not the case. These guys, I mean, it's team. And then you hear what's going on with the radio, with, you know, the crew chief, you know, in the driver's ears. And one of the things that NASCAR and Indy does well is, as a fan, you can actually log on and hear authentic conversations of what's going on during the race with the crew chief and the driver. And they are dropping F-bombs. I mean, these guys are very honest and truthful with themselves and with each other. Oftentimes, there's an accident going on right behind them, and the crew chief's telling them which way they need to turn to avoid a crash. Split-second type of stuff. So the communication, the teamwork, all that stuff is just so interesting. Now I'm not really a tool ahead, getting to big engines, cars, and oh, they made this adjustment. That's just not me, but I like the teamwork part of it and the coordination part of it, and that's why I get into it. And honestly, another thing that NASCAR, Indy, you know, the IndyCar series does well is that they educate the listeners and watchers, you know, the viewers. So people like myself that didn't grow up in this thing, you kind of learn and take away a few things each time you watch a race. So that's my experience. Again, 400,000 people, you know, it's the biggest sporting event in terms of live attendees in the world. So that's why I say that if you're a sports fan, take it in at least once. You may not get bit by the bug like I did, but it's a great experience.
Hey, I don't know what to say, man. I mean, it never crossed my mind as something to go to. You know, I've actually thought about the Kentucky Derby, which I would imagine would be a similar experience. But you know, you really opened my eyes to the Indy 500. You know, we rapped about it last year for a moment, and when you were hitting me up with the text this year, I was joking and saying, you know, I was kind of like, oh, nobody would want to watch that. But I was really like, oh yeah, he did go to that. You know, so that was one of those experiences where it's like, you know, maybe that's something that we do an RSG show from the Indy 500 or something like that. Take our listeners behind it. You know, once we get those press passes, we're working on it. We're going to try to maneuver our way into some press passes. But 400,000 people in one spot, that does sound very intimidating, very overwhelming. And to have them all be focused on one particular event, I would imagine that could be something to see, and that's definitely something I think is a different perspective. For me, it's not something I've ever. I didn't grow up with racing. I don't know about you,
yeah.
KZoo. Did you grow up with racing?
No, actually not. Never.
We had to wake Eric up. We had to wake Eric up. Now, one thing I would suggest.
Done with that NASCAR story? That's cool. No, it sounds like it's a phenomenal event. I've never desired to go to the Indy 500 or even the Michigan Speedway here. But it does seem like it would be kind of exciting to be in, to be that close to the cars going 200 miles per hour, et cetera, potential of crashes, tires flying, you know, all that good stuff.
You know, one of the things for the listeners out there, I would highly suggest that if there's something you're thinking about doing, you know, even if you're going to your local track or something like that, take somebody with you who knows a little bit about it, because that's what made my experience so fulfilling, if that word's appropriate, is because, you know, one of the guys that went with us, he grew up with this stuff. And, you know, he goes to the Daytona 500 every year. He's been to the Indy 500 multiple times. And, you know, he was willing to answer a lot of our questions in terms of the rules. I mean, it's just like watching, you know, it's like watching Australian rules football or rugby for the first time. If you don't know the rules, you're like, okay, what are they doing? You don't really understand it. So if you have somebody there to kind of understand the rules and the strategies, I think that really helps out the experience as well.
Absolutely. So that's the NASCAR minutes on RSG. That's gonna have to get us through for to next year's Indy 500. But we appreciate that perspective. Now we got one more topic we want to hit before we slide into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week, and then the shutdown. When we go shutdown mode, we hit you with the preview. We shut things down, and then we go into after hours. So before we get into that, I want to hit one more topic real quick, and that topic is Manny Pacquiao. Now, about 2 weeks back, Manny Pacquiao came out and said that he was against gay marriage. Now, this is one of those moments where the real sports guys are going to get a little real. This is where we get real. Again, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. So Manny Pacquiao came out and said that he wasn't really in favor of gay marriage. He has a big fight coming up. Do you think that's going to hurt? Because Manny has been pretty squeaky clean to this point. Has been very, very media friendly as far as his persona, his whole package. Do you think that's going to affect Manny's, one, his public perception, and then, two, the monetary numbers on his next fight? Anybody.
I'll
PhD.
Jump. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'll jump in. So, yeah, I think it will have an effect. But in boxing is this gladiator barbaric type of thing. And the true boxing fans, the ones that never left, that just don't, I mean, the cats that watch Friday Night Fights, the ones that watch HBO, you know, Friday, you know, Fighting at the Dark every weekend, I mean, these cats don't care less what Manny say. They want to see good fighting. I think where it's going to affect them is kind of like the Tebow fans. You know, a lot of Tebow fans aren't really football fans. They're Tebow fans. And so, you know, it might affect the cat who, you know, he and his wife have a get-together, you know, to have friends over to watch the fight. It might affect him. Hey, I don't want to support Manny anymore. Okay, yeah. So he might lose some tickets right there and some sales right there. But, you know, to be fair, I think Manny backtracked and, you know, and even the reporter came out and said, hey, this isn't exactly what Manny said. What he said was that he's not against it. He just doesn't believe it's right. So, you know, I mean, I think the retraction or the clarification on what he actually said kind of will mitigate the situation, in my opinion.
Okay, okay. Keizu Guru, you got an opinion on that?
Yeah, I actually agree with Phil on that. I think that anytime you make a statement as bold as that, and again, we're talking about the initial, not the retraction, anytime you side with one party or another, there's going to be some folks that are going to disagree or either look upon you as that you don't have a right to be saying that publicly. So I think there is going to be a little bit of backlash, but not much at all. Again, the folks that are still watching boxing and watching Manny Pacquiao and Mayweather, they're waiting to see this super fight. So I don't think it's going to lose much traction, but I'm sure it will turn some folks off. And again, mostly the fair weather fans, some of the women that are just watching for leisure type of thing. But No, I think that, again, we want to see this fight. We want to see him win so we can get this this big money Mayweather on.
Yeah. So he has a fight coming up with Bradley coming up in a couple of weeks' time. Really quick, PhD, give me a quick handicap of who's got an advantage and where their advantages lie between Pacquiao and Bradley.
Pacquiao experience, power. I think Pacquiao gets him.
Okay. Hamilton, you on that same boat?
Only thing Bradley has on his side is youth. Pacquiao is too much power, too much speed. He can punch from all angles. He's coached by one of the best or trained by one of the best. He's durable. This guy's going to be – he's going to slaughter Bradley.
Hey, we 3-for-3 because I don't really have Bradley putting up much of a fight. Maybe he makes it entertaining. Maybe he catches Pacquiao a few times, but I got Pacquiao putting it on him.
Yeah,
I'm not wavering off that either. So we'll see how that plays out. We'll revisit the whole Pacquiao Bradley thing as it continues to build towards the fight. Right now, we're gonna pay a few bills and get into our dog of the week. Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital dog of the week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right, so Dog of the Week. This is a segment of the show where we pick an athlete, a personality, somebody in the world who has represented for the Dogs. And what that means is that they've just been living life at a very intense, fierce, hungry, renegade-like level. So with that said, Mr. Hamilton.
We need more Dogs.
My Dog of the Week, I've got to go with D'Wayne Wade. D'Wayne Wade has come up out of his shell. He struggled early in the postseason, and he's just been on a tear, showing why he has that championship ability, and he is the closer. So that is my Dog of the Week.
Excellent. D-Wade has been balling. Very impressive as they closed out the Miami Heat. Very impressive against in the first game against the Boston Celtics. Whatever Indiana did to wake him up, I wish they hadn't, because with him playing that way and with LeBron being LeBron, it's going to be hard to see the Heat not playing deep into June. So I agree with that. Hats off to D-Wade. PhD.
We need more Dogs.
Mike Miller. I never thought I'd actually say, have a chance to legitimately come with Mike Miller for Dog of the Week. And, I was the guy, man, when they signed Mike Miller before last season, I'm like, that's the piece they need. That's the piece they need, because this guy will make open shots. He's a good passer. He plays decent on the defensive end. And all last postseason, you're just shaking your head. I mean, it's kind of like Ray Allen yesterday. When he finally makes a shot, you're, happy for him, because you don't want to see somebody struggle so much. Yeah, I mean, that's been Mike Miller, man, the whole last season, two seasons. So he stepped up in Game 6 against the Pacers, and he had another quality game in Game 1 yesterday against the Celtics. So I can legitimately say Mike Miller is my Dog of the Week.
Mike Miller has been stepping up. One thing I'll say about Mike Miller is, did a player get so old so fast? I mean, I don't know who got older faster, Mike Miller or Steve Francis. I mean, there were points that Mike Miller in the game where Mike Miller fell, and it was like, somebody please help him up because he can't get up. lay there and wait on his teammates to come pick him up. So it was great to see him knocking down shots because he needed that to show that he still had a pulse. We going all Heat with the Dog of the Week because
we need more Dogs.
And I'm going with Udonis Haslam as my Dog of the Week. The Heat needed to make a statement to the Pacers. They needed to assert their will, and basically they needed to stop letting people punk them. And Haslam stepped up, and unfortunately he wasn't around in the playoffs last year for Heat fans. Unfortunately he wasn't around because I think things would have went different if he had been around for a longer period of time, because he would have had that moment. He's that one guy to me, and we've talked about this, who has that inner dog where he ain't going to take stuff off people too much. He's got a breaking point, and when he gets to that breaking point, he may lay some wood on you. And that's what he did to Hansborough. And when Hansborough started to drive, you could see it in Haslam's eyes. I was talking to one of my brothers who's a big Heat fan, and I was telling him, nobody go to block a shot with two hands. Because he tried to convince me that Haslam made a play on the ball. I'm like, when have you ever blocked a shot with two hands in your life? When you go up with two hands, you're going for the wrap-up, all right? You're going up there to wrap the guy up and to knock him down, and that's what Haslam did. That's what he's supposed to do. The Heat needed that. It brought him together. It galvanized that team. It also made a statement to the Pacers that, look, we're done with the silliness. We're done with the games. So props, hats off to Haslam for bringing that gulliness, that toughness, that dog to that Heat locker room, because they sorely needed it. And, you know, I think him sacrificing himself for a game really solidified the transition of that team to where they're playing. They're hitting on all cylinders right now, and they still have a bullet in the chamber in Chris Bosh that they have yet to load up and fire off. That team is looking real scary because LeBron and D-Wade are still two of the top five players in the league, and they're both clicking right now. And when you got those two guys of that caliber clicking, it's hard. And I think Haslam really solidified that and really shut the door on what the Heat used to be, and I think they're a different team now. So that's the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Now we're going to move into next week's preview, which will be provided by BLT Sports PhD. Lay it on them.
So next week we have a treat. Craig Bohl, the head coach of North Dakota State, who just won the FCS, the football championship, the subdivision national championship, by beating Sam Houston State last season. He's going to be on to talk about spring practices and also talk about their upcoming season. So I'm really excited to have Coach Bohl coming on. And then 2 weeks from tonight, on June 12th, Yolanda Henley, she is a AAU women's girls basketball coach in Georgia, just recently won the AAU state championship. She's going to talk about the evolution of women's basketball and the role that AAU is playing in the development of young women, girls playing basketball. So really interesting to have her come on and kind of talk about, you know, kind of carrying this conversation on when we had Samiko Randall on a couple of weeks ago, the head coach at Ohio U and the former All-American at Tennessee. So that's what we got coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Sounds fantastic, man. It sounds really interesting. It's really different. It almost sounds European. I'm telling you, man, Eric, man, I love that. That is one, like, when you're on air, you get something good, especially when you're the guy who has to put together all the intros and that kind of stuff, and you get something like that. Where that's perfect. That is gold right there. I couldn't have said something like that myself. So I appreciate that, man. And I do want to thank you for holding it down with us. We're going to be transitioning into the after-hours section in a moment. But before we do that, we're going to get into the shutdown. All right? The shutdown is where the real sports guys, we point out a piece of whackness that is plaguing the world around us. We point it out to our listeners out there so that you can go back into your communities and shut it down. It can be sports related. It can be related to politics. It can be related to pop culture. It can be related to anything you want it to be related to. But you got to shut it down. So we're going to point out the things you need to shut down for the next week until we see you again next Tuesday. PhD, shut it down.
I'm shutting down all the barbershop talk about the Heat. Everybody was getting on the train. They had the bus token out when the Heat got down 2-1. Why you hating? Why you hating? Why you hating? That's it.
Okay, KZU Guru, shut something down. What you shutting down?
You know, in West Michigan, we've had 10 deaths of African-American young men this year, and we're not even deep into the summer yet. So I'm shutting down the violence. Shutting down the youth that are feuding with the youth, and they don't even know each other's names. All they know is this person lives on this block, this person lives on this side of town. So I'm shutting all that down, all that endless violence.
That's a legit shutdown right there. That's a legit shutdown. I'm going to follow that with something way more frivolous. And I'll throw out my disclaimer right away. I am going to shut down these loud shirts that these brothers are wearing. Russell Westbrook, I know you're trying to do something different. It's almost European. Nick Young, a couple weeks back, trying to do something different. Almost European. Cut it out, fellas. Cut it out. You can look professional. You can try it. You don't have to look like a thug, but you're also going to look like a galvanized Urkel, okay? So that's what we shut down this week. Renegade Radio, RSG, holding you down. Tuesday night, 8:30 to 10:30. Join us again next week. Be well, be blessed, take care, peace.
I'm not laughing about it. You think this is funny? I take this serious.
I'm real serious.
I put my heart and soul into this every single week.
All I'm saying is the camera shows
you. I'm just telling you right now what I do every single week. Every single week. I put my freaking heart and soul into this. I study my ass off. I don't go out there and laugh. It's not funny. Nothing's funny to me. I don't want to go out there and get embarrassed.
All right, and we're back. The Real Sports Guys, this is the After Hours section. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys, or Real Guys Talk Real Sports, www.realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. This is the After Hours section. We're going to go for about 15 minutes. We want to hit a couple of topics, get into them, and then we're going to let you go for the night. Again, this is for the downloaders, the folks that download the podcast and listen to it on the treadmill. We appreciate your patronage, and we're going to keep it live and funky for you for the next 15 minutes. Now, I'm here with PhD, and we have the K-Zoo guru, Eric Hamilton, joining us tonight. He's sitting in for D. Wills, who's out there handling some family business. Shout out to D. Wills. I know you're doing your thing wherever you are, brother. Now, what we're going to talk about during this after-hours section is we're going to talk about the situation with boxer Paul Williams. Now, for those of you that are unaware, Paul Williams got into a motorcycle accident yesterday. And as of right now, it appears that he is going to be paralyzed from the waist down. Now, Paul is 30 years old. He's a very accomplished boxer. He is scheduled, or was scheduled, to fight Canelo Alvarez, a very charismatic, very exciting, young, up-and-coming fighter in September. But, of course, all of that has been put on halt because of this motorcycle accident. Now, what I want to throw out to PhD, if you could kind of give the listeners an idea of the loss for the boxing world and the boxing community of the talent of Paul Williams for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, Williams was a talent, man. You know, whenever I think of him, you know, I think about, and I hate to say this, especially with the brother just having this accident, but I think of Williams and Martinez, too. Martinez, Sergio Martinez knocked him out cold. I mean, that is like the definition of, you know, you think about Friday and Debo and Craig, you got knocked, you know what, out. I mean, he got pounded. But let's talk about positives here. So,
go ahead, positive.
You know, yeah, but honestly, Paul Williams, a.k.a. the Punisher, excellent talent. Especially, you know, with the U.S. just being, you know, really needing a boxing star, a solid, you know, lineup, bench strength of boxers, you know, once you get past Mayweather, really been hungry for that second, third guy to stand up. We'd love him to be in a heavyweight, but we'll take who we can get. And Paul Williams was that guy for so long. He's only 30, 41-2. 27 of his wins and knockouts. And, you know, I just remember him earlier on as a welterweight, you know, watching him on HBO, ESPN. I remember his first time he was on ESPN, D. Wills was texting me. This is about 10 years ago, man, 10, 11 years ago. And he was telling me, this cat, Paul Williams, he's from Georgia. You know, he's fighting Sergio Rios. And, man, he didn't disappoint. You know, Williams knocked him out, and that's just when I was first getting in the bike boxing. You know, I would have loved to see him, you know, fight Alvarez, who I think is an up and comer, obviously. But, you know, I remember his fight against Winky Wright, you know, Margarito. And, I mean, he's just a beast, man. So it's really sad. Obviously, it looks like his boxing career is over unless he makes a miraculous recovery. But at this point, I'm more concerned about his family and just this young man who this morning, before he got on the bike, had the world in front of him, and now he's got this big hurdle he needs to get over.
Yeah, and Mr. Hamilton, can you talk a little bit about that process of trying to come back from this? Is this something, you know, I the idea that, you know, again, this young man had the world in front of him. He was a unique fighter too, because he could fight at the light, the middleweight, you know, light heavyweight. He could fight across levels because of his frame. He's a taller guy, so it's easy for him to put on weight, lose weight, and still maintain his muscle mass and power because he had a little bit more to carry it with. So he can go up and down in weight classes. And now, you know, that's all gone. So can you talk about that for him? Like, what's the next step for Paul Williams in your mind?
Well, I mean, first I just want to give credit to him. I mean, he's a phenomenal talent. He was one of those boxers that you just did not want to face. You know, he was one of those guys where, you know, his awkward style, his size, I mean, it just made it uncomfortable. A guy that you wouldn't mind skipping out on. Hopefully, you know, you guys don't cross paths, those kind of guys. But for the near future, I mean, obviously it's more important to focus in on your family. You know, your boxing career is essentially over if he's paralyzed from the waist. And this accident could have been more tragic going back to Corrales, I believe, that died on a motorcycle accident in Vegas maybe 10 years ago or so. But it could have been something that tragic. So at this point, boxing behind you, let's focus on, you know, obviously being able to walk and then trying to do something with your life there. So it's a very, very tragic situation that took place. I wish him all the best, man, to him and his family. I think boxing in general, you know, it has some issues. You know, there's not any American, real American challengers out there. And so therefore, boxing is becoming dissipated, you know, and mixed martial arts is taking over. Again, off the topic. So, but yeah, Paul Williams is a true talent.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's keep it going with that line of thought. What do you think needs to happen? What needs to happen for boxing to be fixed? And I put that, I'm doing air quotes. Y'all can't see that, but I'm doing air quotes. What needs to happen for boxing to be quote unquote fixed?
You know, for me, it's a couple things, and I've stated this before, and people always look at me and they say it won't work. But boxing is really the only sport that you have no idea of how you're doing. You have no idea to gauge a score. I mean, it's a lot of, I think I'm up, I think I can do this, but, I mean, as we see a lot of times, they're wrong. You know, you get a boxer that begins to coast because they think they're up or something like that. And then I understand the other side to it is that, you know, if you're up six rounds or eight rounds to two or one, then you can coast. But, I mean, realistically, any sport that you're up, yeah, you can tone it down a little bit. But, you know, boxing is a little bit different than the other sports because there's not one commissioner. You know, it's you can't market the boxers like you can the Kobe's or, you know, the Tom Brady's. NFL can push Peyton Manning into the limelight, and boxing doesn't have that commissioner to be able to do so. You know, Mayweather has his, I'm going to say his fame because he kind of pushed himself. He turned himself into a villain. You know, he went from pretty boy to money, and, you know, he basically became a villain, but he wasn't always like that. He changed it up. So he had to basically self-make himself into this millionaire. And there's a lot that boxing needs to do. They've got to revamp this sport. Somebody has to take a hold of it. Otherwise, boxing is going to be gone, a thing of the past, in 5 years or so. And mixed martial arts is going to take off because their superstars are on fire. They're all over the place. They've got regular TV contracts. They're doing a big fight per month. I mean, it's a wild fight. You got to be able to keep up, and boxing is not at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you on that. I think boxing, they need to centralize and make it easier for people to follow who's up and coming,
who are the big names to follow, you know. And also, the system of who fights who is very convoluted. And I think if people could wrap their minds more around a pecking order, some sort of a more concrete ranking system, I think that would help as well, where people will say, okay, so Paul Williams is out of the picture, unfortunately, because of his accident. Where does a Canelo Alvarez go now? Who does he fight now? Who's next in line? And how quickly, you know, you can watch somebody climb up the rankings. You know, you can watch a Canelo Alvarez begin to climb up the rankings as he begins to ascend to the top. And people can follow that better. Whereas it's really very nebulous and very difficult to wrap yourself around fighters' stories because there doesn't seem to be a very clear storyline to follow as far as their rise in the sport. I think boxing does a very good job of telling the story of how guys get to where they are. But then once they're there and once they're a name and once they're a known commodity, how do they begin to rise to the top and then how do they begin to position themselves? You know, I think that's one thing that boxing does a pretty good job of, but I think they could do a better job of. And I think other sports do it better where they allow people to compare across generations, fighters. And you can do that in boxing, but there aren't a lot of common threads across generation where you can say, well, this guy did this or this guy did this. Because it's constantly changing and evolving, and the way guys get lined up for fights and the politics of it is continually changing. So that I think that has a tremendous effect on exactly what we see and then the ability to follow the sport. So here's something I want to throw out to you. So Paul Williams is off the table. Now, we all know, it seems like in general, Canelo Alvarez is on a trajectory to enter into that. If all goes well, he has an opportunity to enter into that Pacquiao, possibly enter into that Pacquiao-Mayweather category as far as being an attention grabber. Who's his next fight? Because Paul Williams-Alvarez would have been a great fight. It would have been a great fight for both of them. It would have been a great opportunity for Williams. It would have been another name that Alvarez could either, you know, it could put on his, could, another notch in his belt if he's going to continue to rise up the rankings. So now where does Alvarez go given Williams' accident?
Well, I think Alvarez, it's one of those things where you see this young man just pulverizing his opponents, and you just say to yourself, I hope they don't push him along too fast, you know, because theoretically you're like, okay, let's see him against Floyd, let's see him against Pacquiao, but I think logically most people understand that he's probably not ready for that. So I would say his next step would be fighting those second-tier type of fighters to see how he does against them, like you mentioned, Williams, but, you know, your Ortizes, your Marquez, you know, even a Cotto. You know, I think somewhere in that group, you know, within his next fight or two, we want to see him fight against that tier. Even throw Margarito at him, you know, kind of see how he does with that tier guy. What are your thoughts, Eric?
Yeah, I agree. You don't want to jump him too fast into a Mayweather-Pacquiao. He's definitely not ready for that, but I'd like to see him against like a Berto or, I think Cotto is a better talent. I think Cotto might crush him, but a class like Berto or, a guy like that. You can't get him too high because you don't want to destroy his confidence this quickly.
All right, so we're gonna leave it on that note. A jewel dropped by the Keizu guru, Eric Hamilton. Thank you again, brother, for helping us out this week. We got to get you back on and have you sitting in the host chair more often. You did an excellent job today. Definitely ripped the guest appearance. PhD, well done as usual. Yeoman-like work. Appreciate it. Listeners out there, appreciate you for downloading. Again, you're listening to The Real Sports Guys, www.com.
RealSportsTheGuys.com, RSD Renegade Radio. Check us out again next week, same time, same place, Tuesday nights, 8:30 to 10:30, Blog Talk Radio. Take care, be well, peace.